This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Anime is a huge part of our culture, whether you know it or not. And joining me to speak about the impact of anime and what shows and movies were the most influential is Managing Interest Editor from Anime News Network, Lindsay Loveridge. Thanks for joining me, Lindsay.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so I have to ask, I looked it up on the internet, how to pronounce anime. Is it anime, anime, which one is it?
Most in like the Western fandom are probably going to say anime, but the correct pronunciation based on how Japanese syllabary works, it's anime. No one really says that really in the West. You know, it's kind of been sort of adopted just as anime, so no one's going to like make fun of you for saying anime instead of anime.
Okay, so my thing is when it comes down to saying anime, isn't it animation or is it something else?
It is kind of a loan word from animation. Like I said, it's not really wrong as far as like pronouncing vowels and consonants in Japanese appropriately. They don't have like eh, it's ah. So okay.
So what is the difference between anime and cartoons then?
Some people might get mad at me for saying this, but there really isn't any. There really isn't any. There's some like hallmark stylistic cues between the two that kind of differentiate them and point of origin. You know, anime is from Japan, but even that is kind of getting blurred now because there's a lot more co-productions going on nowadays between China and Japan, and even in some cases America and Japan. So it gets hard to draw the line. Like, if it's animated in Japan but directed by an American, is it still anime? Or if it's directed by someone in Japan who has experience with making anime there, but they come over here and have, I don't know, Canadians animate it, is it anime? So it's not really clear-cut anymore, but most would agree that the main idea is that it maybe originated in Japan. Some would say for Japanese audiences, but that's also kind of iffy at this point, because with streaming, things have gotten way more worldwide. You have a worldwide audience now, and industry people in Japan take note of that, as far as like financials and things like that. So it's really kind of that's actually a kind of a more complicated question than it looks on the surface.
When was the first anime made, like the official one?
Probably when most people think of early anime, they're going to think of like Speed Racer or Astro Boy or maybe a Giganter. But anime is actually a really old medium. And the oldest anime discovered so far is called The Dull Sword. The Japanese title is Namakura Gatana, which was made by Junichi Kochi. And it is like a 5-minute film about a samurai that came out in 1917. And they keep finding older, some of it's usually drawn like directly on celluloid animation work from Japan. So it's actually very, very old. Probably most would think of the first television anime that came over to America, which would be Astro Boy.
Astro Boy would be the first anime in America then. Is there any others that came with it?
Astro Boy was the first really big one to come over, and that's Osamu Tezuka show. So people know Osamu Tezuka is referred to as the god of manga by some people because he created Astro Boy, Princess Knight, Kimba the White Lion, just a huge body of work. Astro Boy was, to my knowledge, the first that was aired on American TV. And some other ones around that period would be 8-Man, which was a kind of a superhero show that was black and white. Wonder 3, which was also a Osamu Tezuka black and white. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Astro Boy was the first to come over onto American television from Japan.
Now, how long did it take for it to become mainstream? Because this stuff, like you said, like all the way back to 1917 and to now. I mean, that's 100 years and now it's popping. Or has it always been popping?
It hasn't always been popping. And I think I would say that anime became more mainstream as in like your average kid at least like knew one of the shows when you were talking, you know, at recess or something, was around the Toonami daytime block era. There is a Toonami block now that airs Saturday night on Cartoon Network, but once upon a time in the early aughts, it aired during daytime in the afternoon, like after school, and that was sort of, I think, the height. There was Dragon Ball Z was on that block, Sailor Moon was on that block, Gundam Wing was on that block, and so that I think that really kind of caused a surge in like new fans. prior to that, you know, if you wanted to watch anime, you were either buying really expensive VHS tapes that had like two episodes and there was like 30 episodes on Earth for like $30 a piece. Maybe you could get some of them at Blockbuster or Hollywood Video, rest in peace, but those don't exist anymore. And that was usually like edgier stuff. It wasn't really kid-friendly. That was like Akira and Ghost in the Shell and Shadow Skill and sort of this like gory, dark stuff. Or, you know, if you had an in, you might know someone who did like VHS fan sub trading. We've gone a long way since then now. Now that we've got legit streaming services like Crunchyroll, it's also really caused a sort of like a second wave, I would say, since the Toonami era. Crunchyroll gets us episodes within 24 hours of when they aired in Japan in multiple subtitle languages, and you can use the website for free and watch the newest episode a week late, or you can subscribe and like watch it the same day, which is just amazing to me, because I got into anime in the 90s. I was buying those 30 buck VHS tapes with like allowance money or something. So to see how the industry has really just developed over time for the demands of new audiences and stuff is pretty crazy.
I'm the same way. I grew up with, you know, in the 90s watching all this stuff. And, you know, you didn't mention it, and I think I'm the only one who remembers. Do you remember Sci-Fi Channel used to have Saturday morning anime, or no?
Wasn't it really late night?
It was like early in the morning, and they played just movies. I used to wake up and watch it, and I was just like, how come nobody remembers this?
Okay, so back in the 90s, my parents had satellite TV. I got stuff, like, everything was 3 hours off back then. If you had satellite, everything was airing according to when it would on, like, the East Coast, and I'm on the West Coast. I remember something just called the Action Channel at the time, and there was Sci-Fi Channel, and they both would have blocks, and I definitely did watch them because that's how I saw Mermaid Scar. The Mermaid Scar OVA, it's based on Rumiko Takahashi's work, but it's like one of her few like horror things. Everyone knows her for like Inuyasha and Ranma One Half and Urusei Yatsura, stuff like that. But she has Mermaid Scar was like her like gory horror work. And so I saw that on there. I saw Shadow Skill on there. I think I saw the cut dubbed Tekken movie. That was really bad. It had, like, I don't know. I just remember there was a dinosaur that gets, like, throat punched in it or something. Like, it was crazy and weird. That's where I saw that stuff when I was maybe, I don't know, like, 12 or 13. So I vaguely remember that.
It's funny. You talked about the fan sub tapes, and I remember those because at Comic-Cons, you were able to buy them. And they were blank tapes, and they had, like, some BS picture stickered on the front, and that's how you would buy it. And sometimes they were super expensive depending on how rare it was. And this was all pre-internet. So everything that came with anime
was dial-up then. You couldn't download, like, if you wanted to download 3 megabytes, it would take you 30 minutes. I remember because I used to make anime music videos back in the day, and I'd be downloading clips off of websites. It would take me forever to download any clips for my music videos. I didn't go to conventions until I was older, and when I did, it was just SakuraCon because that's my nearest one. But there was a fansub webpage where you could, you know, pay the cost of tapes and have them mailed to you. And I definitely did that. You had to send cash or check, I think, or cash or money order.
There you go,
money order. And there was a form you had to fill out and write down what tapes you wanted. And I got this series still isn't licensed, Violinist Hamlin fan sub that way. Also, I had some Vampire Princess Miyu television series before it was licensed that way. That's all I remember off the top of my head. They would put 4 episodes or something on a tape, but I think Violinist Hamlin was like 26 episodes, and you bought 3 tapes at a time, and I was buying it with babysitting money. So it took me a while to get, you know, to get more. Oh, God, tapes.
right. And then I remember I used to record the Saturday morning anime on my tapes, and I actually still have them somewhere because they were so rare. You love them because it's like, oh, I finally got Ghost in the Shell on tape. You know, I'm going to take the commercials out later.
That's how I watched the dubbed later 2 seasons of Sailor Moon. So I saw the first 2, what Deke had done up to that time, and this is what got me into anime. When I was in, like, 5th grade, it aired on USA Network. That's where I watched it at, and this is before it moved on to Toonami, and then it was popular enough on Toonami the second time around. By then I was in high school, and that they got the Pioneer, got the second 2 seasons, and then dubbed them with Cloverway, and it aired on Toonami. But I was going to a school across town, and I didn't get home till like 4 p.m., So I would set a tape to record that would start at like 3:30, so that by the time I got home, it was recorded, and then I could watch it because there was no DVR.
Like, right.
That was a thing, you know? Yeah, old school.
Well, you know, what else is old school is, you may not remember it, because you said you were 9 with Sailor Moon. I was a little bit older.
Yeah.
Funimation used to come out, like Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. It came out on, it was the Mexican channel in Chicago. And I forgot what station it was, but it was in Spanish. So if you wanted to watch Dragon Ball in Chicago, you'd have to watch it in Spanish. And of course I did.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
You know, the reason I'm bringing all of this up, you know, not just for nostalgia purposes, it's because it's influenced us today. When you think of anime, you can't help but to think of movies. You know, Matrix was heavily influenced by anime, you know. Inception was influenced by anime. So I'm just curious, what anime do you think is super influential to not just, you know, obviously the genre, but to, like, entertainment in general?
I put together a list of what I think is influential, like, right now, which is sort of like the changeover. I mean, obviously the big ones that people talk about from the past is Akira. You know, you can't, one that gets cited with, like, interviews with celebrities when they ask them. They're still trying to make a Hollywood movie of that. Like, it's been stuck in hell for, movie production hell for, like, a decade. Ghost in the Shell, which did eventually get made into a live-action movie, but we don't have to talk about it.
It was good. If you're a real fan, you're going to love it. No, I'm just joking.
I can appreciate what Weta Workshop did for it, like, as far as, like, the aesthetic, but, I mean, it's a whole can of worms.
It is, but...
The casting and stuff like that. So, yeah, I would say Akira, for sure. Some that I would say are more influential maybe in Japan as far as, like, setting up. Like, Sailor Moon is considered the blueprint for the team take on that. Prior to that, it was usually, like, you know, it was kind of a solo thing. It was one magical girl, like Creamy Mommy or Cutie Honey, although that, you know, Go and the Guys take on a magical girl. But Sailor Moon was the first to really introduce, like, a team of five. And they took the aspects from Super Sentai shows, like, you know, Power Rangers and things like that, to do the color coding. And it was hugely successful. And most magical girl shows that come out now are still, like, a team of four or five with, you know, color-coded. Precure being, like, the huge, big one over there that's a giant, never-ending franchise at this point. And they, you know, switch up the powers and maybe the theme, but they're usually still color-coded magical girls with a magical item. You can't really overlook that. A lot of Rumiko Takahashi's works, I feel, have been just really influential. Inuyasha brought in a ton of fans in the 2000s with its mixing supernatural Japanese culture with, you know, a rom-com, but also, you know, the quest to get so many of something that leads to giant episode counts. So Inuyasha then, for sure. If we want to talk about what I think is really influential now that's really changing or has really set some trends, you can't really ignore Sword Art Online. Love it or hate it, you know, it can be kind of divisive, but we've seen a huge influx in what's called the isekai genre, which is the idea of being transported to another world, since that became a really big hit. It existed before with stuff like Fushigi Yugi, but the video game world thing has just become, within the last 10 years, like, really big, and I think you can credit Sword Art Online for that. And I think, did you see Ready Player One?
I've seen bits and pieces. I've been meaning to see it.
it's kind of a similar concept, other than, you know, all the, like, giant nostalgia stuff in it, but it's the same sort of idea, like, delving into an alternate reality world and having all, you know, kind of being super OP and stuff like that. Those were kind of the ones that I was thinking as far as major influences in the genre.
You know, it's funny. I usually just watch really old stuff and anything from, like, 90s back, personally. I don't like the way it's going now. It seems kind of poppy. I don't know if that makes sense. Yeah. But so I started thinking for myself, like, man, let me go way back in my Wayback Machine and try to figure out, what do I think is out there that's, like, really influential? And I know for me, Grave of the Fireflies. Did you ever see that?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so it's so sad, right?
Takahata just passed away, which is, I mean, he was old, but it's still really sad.
Yeah. Grave of the Fireflies. Now, this is one of those that when I was growing up, you know, going to your local VHS store, you know, you're going to rent something. And I was just renting everything. And this was one of the things, like, on the shelf. And I was like, oh, okay, time to rent. And this is the first time for me that I watched some kind of any type of animation that was so adult and had such mature content of just, you know, orphans at war or like they're after the war and, you know, people dying. And it was the first time that was introduced for me. And it showed how complex anime is. It's not just about mechas and, you know, cyberpunk and magical girls. This was like some really in-depth stuff. So for me, that was like my number one up there. And then, you know, I started thinking of like Paprika. And a lot of people don't know about Paprika, but Paprika was like the inception for anime. And it did it so much better than Inception, personally. But Christopher Nolan, who was like the director, he actually was influenced not only by Paprika, but Perfect Blue, too. So all of the movies that he was doing, it was like, you know, it came from anime and you didn't know it. Now, the third one for me, and this is in no particular order also, was Princess Mononoke. And it came out in 97. And this, the reason why I was like, this one is like really up there is because the voiceovers, usually, you know, it's some obscure voiceover artist. But in this case for Princess Mononoke, oh my God. I mean, it was an entire all-star lineup. They had Billy Bob Thornton, Minnie Driver. Who else?
Gillian Anderson.
Yes. Jada Pinkett Smith. Yeah. They had Claire Danes. Keith David. Yeah. I mean, the list goes on. Those are just like some of it. So many people were involved with Princess Mononoke, and a lot of people didn't realize that anime was that big until all these stars were starting to do voiceovers. And this was like way back in 97 too. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw it in theaters. I saw it in theaters. I have a memory of that. Princess Mononoke, one of the reasons they were able to get such a big star-studded cast is because it was a deal with Disney. So there's kind of a fun story with Princess Mononoke, also just like Grave of the Fireflies, is a Studio Ghibli film.
Yes.
And the thing about one's directed by Hisao Takahata and the other's Hayao Miyazaki. With Princess Mononoke, that deal with Disney was made on with the caveat that they would not cut or edit any of it. That was like part of like him signing it because at the time, Harvey Weinstein was in charge of working with Disney's. I can see the logo in my head, but I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, there's a pretty famous story that Hayao Miyazaki sent Harvey Weinstein a katana with a note saying no cut. Because he had had a previous bad experience with Nausicaa, and there was a version of Nausicaa that was got a really limited release that was cut all to hell and changed and nothing like Nausicaa. And after that bad experience, when he renegotiated contracts for bringing his films over here, they weren't allowed to cut any of them. But this is Disney, and they've got money, so if they're going to dub something and they want, you know, people to go see it, they're going to get big names to star in it. So that's why Princess Mononoke was able to get like such a star-studded cast compared to, you know, just the usual TV shows you can buy on DVD or something like that.
Studio Ghibli is just awesome. Everything they produce is just gold, in my opinion.
Yeah. I don't think they've made a bad movie at all. I can't think of one that's, you know, isn't worth seeing at least once. I didn't see Grave of the Fireflies until after I had children, which may have made it worse. I'm not sure. So I watched it on DVD at home, and I had to pause it at one point because I'm just, like, bawling my eyes out, right? And I go to my husband, and I'm just like, he's like, what's the matter? And I just tell him, you know, what's going on with the little sister in it. And he actually refuses to watch the movie. He's like, I can't watch it, because I've kind of told him what it's about. And then those Ghibli films get theater screenings every once in a while, usually at the Art House theaters here in Portland, Oregon. And my friend had never seen it. And so she asked me if I wanted to go. Do you want to go see Grave of the Fireflies with me? It's playing here. I was like, have you seen it before? No, I've never seen it. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to ruin it for you. But, you know, so I went with her and her fiance and two of her friends, and I was the only one who'd seen it before. And even then, you know, I got all sniffly seeing it a second time. The lights go up, and they're just all, their faces are wet. All of them are just, like, wiping tears. Like, it's an important film.
It is.
No matter what, I think it's an extremely important anti-war film. I really think everyone should probably watch it at least once.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I was telling my producer about Grave of the Fireflies, and even now I get kind of choked up. You can't help but just to be so emotional, because it is like, and it's surprisingly emotionally impactful, and it's an anime. You wouldn't think that like a cartoon would pull this amount of emotion from you, and that's why I think it's so important, and not enough credit goes to that film.
And with Paprika and Perfect Blue, like you mentioned, those are both Satoshi Kon films. And he passed away too young, in my opinion. But his whole overture, everything he's done, is all really, really good. So I could start with Perfect Blue. There's a TV series. The only TV series he ever did was Paranoia Agent, which is also really good if you like psychological stuff. It's hard to find now because it's been out of print for quite a while. But hopefully it gets License Rescued eventually, because I think it's an important series, and it deals with, paranoia, sort of like how a boogeyman, social issues can kind of foster within people, and it's really good. Everything he did was really good. Are there any series that you feel like right now are, you said you watch mostly old stuff, but there's actually a lot that comes out every 3 months. There's usually somewhere between like 30, around 30 to 40 new television anime every 3 months. Like, we're kind of in a crazy bubble right now. Have you seen anything recently that you really like?
Dragon Ball Super. I jumped on that, you know, white on rice. Boom, yeah. I was right on it. It's actually on my list. Dragon Ball, just the franchise in general. And the reason it's on my list was because after watching Dragon Ball Super, you know, I was being kind of cheap. Before I would jump to Crunchyroll, I was looking for somebody who was already kind of streaming it just to get it immediately. I came across videos, not just one video, multiple videos that in South America and in Mexico, they would have outdoor events streaming Dragon Ball Super. And this is why I'm like, Dragon Ball is kind of like international. You have like these group of people who obviously all they speak is Spanish, and they're singing the intro song in Japanese. And I was like, that stuff right there is beautiful. Like, anime just brings people together, you know, and I don't think people understand that. Like, this was a giant like soccer field full of people watching on a jumbo screen Dragon Ball Super that, you know, just aired in Japan, and it's 20-30 minutes later and it's airing right there for an outdoor event. And it's not just one.
Yeah.
It was multiple events that had this.
Some of those were put on by the respective governments of like those cities and stuff. It caused a little bit of an issue because those screenings weren't sanctioned by Toei. Well, they weren't. And so the version that they were streaming might have been like Spanish subtitled, fan sub ripped type of thing. But because of the giant turnout, Toei obviously noticed it and then started putting together a campaign to, like, you know, contact us and we'll get you the legal video option so you can do this. Like, initially there was sort of like, we don't sanction this is bad. But then after they saw what a big movement it was, they're like, actually, you know, let's jump on this, because I mean, this is good press, right? So a couple series that, even if they weren't as big in the U.S., they definitely made it bigger in Latin America and over in Europe. There's a couple of mecha series that really like hit it off in the Middle East, and Saint Seiya is like really huge in Latin America, Peru as well, even though that one never really took off here.
It's so funny, I love Saint Seiya. I didn't realize like it was like pretty obscure in the U.S., but everybody loves it, you know, in South America. Yeah. And I don't know why. I think it's the Zodiac stuff, or I don't know.
I don't know. I put it in my column recently as arguing that it's, you know, a magical boy series.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. So you didn't mention anything like recent that you think you
Man, I can't think of anything. You know what? I feel like it's the same thing with comic books. There are so many out there, so many series, that it's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly
what to jump into.
And then there's like, oh, you know, this is season 3 or season 4. Oh, you know, don't watch it, Mason. It's not good until season 5. But then it's like, you know, don't lie to me. I have to watch 1 through 5 so I can understand obscure context. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, definitely. Especially since you mentioned, you know, Dragon Ball Z, I have to get behind My Hero Academia. It's in its 3rd season right now, but all of it's good. So, you know, definitely, I would say definitely watch that. It's superheroes, Shonen Jump show, so, I mean, it's got a lot of heart and rivals and unique character powers and, you know, really cool villains. It's, you know, easy to watch, but it's not like, it doesn't treat its audience like they're dumb. It's really good. And it's a pretty big hit right now. So, yeah, I don't have anything bad to say about My Hero Academia. And then if you wanted to head over to Netflix and you wanted something like a little more artsy but also old school, I definitely recommend Devilman Crybaby, which it's all streaming on Netflix. It's like 11 episodes. It's based on Go Nagai's, you know, original Devilman, because it's like the 50th anniversary of Go Nagai's like debut as a comic artist. So they're remaking a lot of his stuff, like Cutie Honey, but it's directed by Masaaki Yuasa, who is sort of like, He's got a very unique artistic take on anime. He did Ping Pong the Animation, which is on Crunchyroll right now, which is about ping pong, but it's just like, doesn't look like anything else, which is, I think, sort of signature to what he does. So it's got the general Devilman story, you know, it sticks right to the manga as far as like the ending and everything. Gotta watch it. It's just, it's a really unique experience. As long as you can get past like some of the gore and boobs, you know, it's really good. And then another one that's airing right now that's also a remake of an old show that's really good and it's on Crunchyroll is Megalobox. Megalobox is amazing. So it's inspired by Ashita no Joe. So it's a boxing manga. They've done a sort of sci-fi spin on it where everyone's, you know, sports anime with boxing, but everyone wears these sort of like exoskeleton arm enhancement type things, except for, you know, our underdog, like rough and tumble hero, Joe, who's going to, like, defeat these guys using just the fist that God gave him. And, like, all of it, it looks gorgeous, and they intentionally put, like, a filter on it to give it that old anime kind of sketchy aesthetic, so it's not, like, super clean-looking. The music, the opening song, is really, really good. I never skip it. And boxing fights themselves are really intense. And there's character drama, too, to, like, you know, if you're not super into sports, there's still plenty of, like, character drama to keep you enticed. So those are the three right now, I think, you know, are worth checking out.
You know, going back a little bit, and it's my fault, I completely forgot about this one. And it's because for me, It wasn't really impactful, but I know for maybe baby boomers and older Gen Xers, they remember this for their children, Pokemon.
Yeah, Pokemon.
Absolutely. I mean, my mother bought everything Pokemon for me.
Yeah.
You know, even though I kind of grew out of it fast, you know, because that's just the way anime is. You just start growing and consuming, and before you know it, you're out of the realm of the children section. But for parents, they remember that, I think, more than I would. You know, she bought me everything that was Pokemon related. And that was the same thing with my friends. It was either Sailor Moon, Pokemon, or Dragon Ball, right?
Yeah. We had Pokemon in my house. I have a younger brother who's 3 years younger than me. And we had Pokemon Blue. When it came out, I was probably in second or third grade. It was bought for my brother, but I played it. And then, you know, my friends up, I remember being, even in, like, fourth grade, like, we're still into it. And that's when the trading card game got.
Yep.
Everyone wanted their holographic Charizard card.
Yep.
It was all about holographic Charizard. Or, you know, Mew. That, you know, all the playground, like, how to get Mew within the game. You know, like, there was a whole mythology, like, around that people, I remember sharing with classmates about how someone would tell me, oh, you know, if you push the truck near the dock, Mew's underneath it, but you have to have, like, a Machamp or something. All that kind of stuff. None of it's true, unfortunately. But I just remember, like, that those circulating. And so right about when the card game got big is when the anime aired on Kids WB. And I watched every episode of that when it aired with my brother because we were both into it, and it was something I could do with him. So yeah, I remember Ash Ketchum, and I watched his adventures at least up to maybe Orange Islands, I think, is probably about where I fell off. But I still play the games. Every time a new one comes out, I buy it and play it. My husband and I play them together. They're fun. You know, they're not intense. They're not, at least the way we play it, not too overly tactical or anything. And I just like catching cute monsters and then letting them evolve. And I don't get sick of it, I guess. So, yeah, Pokemon is definitely worldwide huge thing still now, I'd say.
Oh yeah. And it's like the gateway drug for anime for a lot of kids. You know, I think that's the one that gets them introduced. And then from there, they start jumping all over the place. And usually it'll go to either Sailor Moon or Dragon Ball. And then from there, it just spreads even further. I think it's really funny. Like I've introduced that to my cousins, and they got into Dragon Ball, and then they went into Naruto, and now it's Boruto. So it's funny how everything just kind of, you can see it starts with Pokemon for some people.
Yeah, definitely.
Man, I really appreciate you coming on. This was a great topic. You had a lot of great insight. For those listening, though, where can they find more information about you?
I am the managing interest editor of Anime News Network, and my name is all over animenewsnetwork.com. I have a column there called The List that I've been writing for 5 years, and as the name suggests, it's lists of things relating to anime and manga, so you can look there for recommendations or, you know, if you liked this one type of thing, there might be a list for it where you can find it in other shows. And the interest section there, which is usually about merchandise, what's trending, anything kind of funny or odd details. That's my section there, and myself and my writer Jennifer contribute to that. Yeah, AnimeNewsNetwork.com's got, we got an encyclopedia, we've got all the latest news, reviews, everything you could probably want for your fandom needs over there.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.